Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going? I'm Ben DuBose, your host. This is Locked On Rockets. Thank you for tuning in. We've been talking a lot this week about the starters with the Rockets, specifically with James Harden's new position change. I'm doing air quotes as I say that because, in a sense, he's been a point guard for some time, but he'll have certainly different responsibilities than Mike D'Antoni. We looked yesterday at the center position, who's going to start between Nene and Clint Capella. But one thing that we have not talked too much about in recent days is the bench. Now, the Rockets are in training camp, and when we have these media availabilities, they were off today, Thursday. They'll be back at it Friday, getting ready for the preseason opener on Sunday against the Shanghai Sharks. But this opening week, when we have talked to Mike D'Antoni, a lot of the questions have been about the players, about James Harden's position change, about the starter at center. One thing we have not gotten to learn a lot about is the bench. And the reason for that, those of us in the media, we have not really gotten to watch much basketball yet. Sure, there have been some drills that we've gotten to see, but we've yet to see a full-blown scrimmage. So without a full-blown scrimmage, much less a preseason game, it's tough to know exactly what the rotations are. However, we certainly have an idea as to who's on Houston's bench. Of course, Eric Gordon, the Rockets have been steadfast from the beginning after signing him that Beverly would still be the starter, whether you want to call him point guard or shooting guard, you know, you can pick that. But basically, Pat Beverly and James Harden will be your starting backcourt. Eric Gordon, your sixth man, and he should be a very good sixth man, one of the better ones in the NBA, and you're paying him $53 million to do that. And as far as the rest of your bench, you have whoever doesn't start between Nene and Clint Capella. You have, hopefully, Denonis Mata-Ioannis, if he ever reports to camp. We think that should hopefully happen within a few days. And then you have the mix, a lot of options at small forward, at Sam Decker, Corey Brewer, KJ McDaniels. You also have some guys who could play spot minutes at point guard in Tyler Ennis and Pablo Prigioni, although really I think most of us expect the guard minutes to be split between Beverly, Harden, and Gordon, with the point guards just playing spot minutes here and there. But on the surface, it's a pretty encouraging bench. I've thought that for a while, that even though a lot of folks are down on it, especially given last year how much it disappointed, especially given Corey Brewer and how much of his performance was subpar relative to expectations. But one thing that I learned this week, it's not just those of us in Houston that are pretty bullish. I got a hold of a clip from Zach Harper of CBS Sports and David Locke, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz and host of Locked On NBA, talking about Houston's bench. And both of these guys were extremely positive about what they see from the Rockets, at least relative to a lot of the consensus expectations. I'm going to go ahead now and roll that clip.
I thought were interesting in your listings. One was the Oklahoma City-Houston aspect of things. They both have superstars, and you both had their benches above average, which if Houston got rid of Corey Brewer, I might agree. Because I actually think Houston's going to be really good this year. Other than Corey Brewer, every single one of their guys uses possessions above the league average, and I'm a huge believer in that. And then Oklahoma City is interesting. It's almost like we need to take a second, just pull back and reevaluate Oklahoma City just from top to bottom. But both those benches above league average, is that a bigger statement about how bad some benches are, or are both those actually pretty good?
I think a little bit of both. I think that the individual components for Houston, like for me, Eric Gordon puts a big push into making that team. Like, if you can have a guy like Eric Gordon coming off your bench, I think that's just a huge boost to your bench, because you need those I'm a very, you know me as a lover of gunners. Like I'm very much a believer in having that offensive weapon off the bench, and someone who shoots like Gordon does, especially with the way he's going to play in Mike D'Antoni's system, as long as he's healthy. I'm very into that idea. They need to re-sign Monte Ioannis, whether they seem to believe it or not. Like, I think that would definitely help the bench. Nene, I don't really know what to do with Nene. I feel like whenever I buy in, he falls apart. Whenever I think he's going to fall apart, he seems to do well. So I'm done guessing on Nene. But I think as a whole, as a unit, the bench will be good together.
That was Zach Harper. You know him as Talk Hoops on Twitter. You can view a lot of his columns on CBSSports.com. And if you want to view the bench column that they're referencing, just Google Zach Harper NBA bench rankings, and you'll see where he ranks the Rockets and their new look bench. He had them at 11th. That was before the trade of Michael Beasley, but certainly Michael Beasley was not a key part of the Rockets bench, especially if they're able to bring back Donatas Bonaiunas, which, as he said, remains a major X factor for this team, but something that most people expect to get done. So it's interesting to hear the Rockets have a good bench. And the reason I say that is because really, with the Rockets, this should be an above-average starting lineup as well. Certainly with James Harden, you're looking at, if all goes well with injuries and everything else, a top-five player in the league. Ryan Anderson is a power forward they've been after for a long time. You paid him $80 million. Pat Beverley and Trevor Ariza, these are guys that have a lot of continuity and chemistry with James Harden. You've paired them with James for the past 3 years running because Daryl Morey believes that they're good fits alongside James, basically his wingmen at the 1 and 3 spots. And at the center spot, you know, it remains to be seen between Nene and Clint Capela, but certainly, at a bare minimum, you should be average, if not above average. We've heard a lot of analysts thinking that Clint Capela is primed for a major breakthrough. We heard Mike D'Antoni say earlier this week that he thinks Nene can be a top-five center still when healthy. I think that's a little bit of paying lip service to him, but certainly, no matter who they go with, you're hoping for, at a bare minimum, average, if not a lot better. So the point is, if you have an above-average starting lineup and a bench that's in the top half of the NBA, then certainly this should be a good basketball team. And for a lot of us, I know that seems obvious, but when you look at the Las Vegas over-under line for the Rockets of 41.5 wins, there's a lot of people who are expecting the Rockets to be mediocre, to be a 500 team. And a big reason for that is because people are down on that bench. They see Clint Capela, who is arguably the best player on the bench last year, stepping into a starting role. They know Corey Brewer still has a big contract, and now he is still projected in the rotation by a lot of folks. And so there's pessimism that, you know what, the Rockets have decreased their depth. It's not just a matter of Dwight Howard leaving, but, you know, with Dwight leaving, you're pushing Capela into the starting lineup and further weakening your depth. But from a practical standpoint, when you actually look at it, this should be a pretty good bench. Eric Gordon, I think Zach and David both hit the nail on the head. He absolutely is your anchor to the bench. At $53 million, you're certainly expecting him to be an above-average bench player. Offensively, he's great. He's a good shooter. He can still create. Defensively, Matt Moore of CBS Sports, Zach's colleague, pointed out last week that Eric, when healthy, really showed some things last year with regards to his ability to play on the ball and be disruptive. So there's a lot of encouraging things about Eric, who's still just in his upper 20s and a pretty young guy. It's not like he's over the hill. Certainly he's had chronic knee injuries, but nothing that's flared up in the last couple of years. And when you're looking at a six-man playing probably 28 minutes a game, you have to feel pretty good about what he can bring to the Rockets. And then whoever out of Nene or Clint Capela does not start, that should be a good player at center. That's someone you can count on to play 20 to 25 quality minutes a night, especially against your typical backup centers in the NBA. Whichever center the Rockets don't start should be substantially better than whoever they match up with in the early minutes of the second and fourth quarters. Then you look at the power forward spot. Yes, Donatas Bonaiunas is not signed, but again, it seems an inevitability. I don't know where it came from. I saw a lot of folks today after the Rockets picked up P.J. Hairston, signed him to basically a D-League rights deal. If he played lights out, he's a first-round pick from 2014. In theory, could P.J. Hairston earn a rotation role? Sure, but I think it's obvious what Daryl Morey is thinking with acquiring his D-League rights. He's a lottery ticket. He's someone that they want to work with in their system. And maybe by mid-season, maybe by especially next season, if they're able to keep him, he's someone that they can develop and turn into something substantial. But I don't think that plays into Mariunas' likelihood of re-signing at all. They still have one open spot for their training camp roster, and nothing has changed on that spot. I see a lot of people that are starting to talk themselves out of Mariunas based on the options that are in camp now. Everything we have heard on the record from Mariunas and his team is that October 1st is the day. The one thing we have heard from BJ Armstrong, his agent, gave an interview right around September 15th. You can go back in the Locked On Rockets archives and view our interview with Calvin Watkins back then. BJ said that October 1st was basically the makeshift deadline that they were working with. That's when things can be acted on with the qualifying offer, and I would not expect much in the way of negotiations before then. Essentially, the Rockets have not been negotiating with Demo. They've been waiting for Demo's team to either present them an offer from elsewhere in the league since he's restricted, or to come back to them when he's ready to seriously negotiate. Nothing's happened. It sounds like from Demo's side, it sounds like the Rockets are waiting for something to happen from Demo's side, and Demo's side has pointed out October 1st multiple times. So I think once October 1st gets here, that Saturday, you're going to have Demo's team get back to the table, and the odds are something's going to happen. Because, quite frankly, I think it's obvious Demo does not have a deal cooking elsewhere. If he did, he would have signed it long before training camp. I think it's clear that the Rockets view Demo as a big piece of their rotation. Otherwise, you would not have Daryl Morey, and especially Mike D'Antoni, speaking at length about it in training camp and at media day. D'Antoni's raved about the role that he can potentially play in this. So just because the Rockets signed another potential rotation player, I hesitate to even call Hairston that, because it's clear he's just a lottery ticket. But no, there's still a spot for Demo. There's still a need for Demo. There's nothing cooking anywhere else. And we're still not even to the October 1st deadline. That's Saturday. So I'm in no way any less optimistic about Demo and the Rockets getting a deal done than I was at this time a week ago. It still feels inevitable. And if and when he signs, if he is healthy, then yes, at a bare minimum, he should be a pretty good backup. You're looking at a guy who, before the back surgery, was a quality starter. So if you're looking at him in a 15 to 20 minute per game role off the bench, then yes, he is above average in that role. And so really, when the Rockets open the season, I expect them to have a nine-man rotation. The five starters who we addressed earlier, and then off the bench, you've got Nene or Capella, the backup center, Eric Gordon, and Donatas Mariunas. Of those three, the backup center, Gordon, and Demo, all three of those, at a bare minimum, are pretty good bench players. Potentially, they're all clearly above average defensive players. So, you're looking at, if you have a nine-man rotation, you've got four bench players. Three of the four are very good. You have one spot remaining, and that's that backup wing, that backup 3-4 hybrid. And a lot of people are assuming that's going to be Corey Brewer because of his contract, because of the experience, and you heard David rightfully point out that, you know, Brewer's the exception to the rule with the Rockets, which is that they generally have players that can all produce offensively at an above-average clip and do things with the basketball. Brewer was just incredibly inefficient last year, not a good defensive player either. There's a couple of things that could happen. First, it's entirely plausible that Brewer could have a bounce-back year. I don't think his skills particularly eroded from 2014 to the 2014 to 2015 season, when he was an above average defensive backup in the NBA and a pretty good offensive one too. I think the fit was off for whatever reason. His defense eroded just as Trevor Ariza's did in the starting lineup. So, you know, with a better fit and a new system, it's entirely plausible that he could have a bounce back year. The other scenario, though, I don't think the Rockets are married to Corey Brewer. As I said last year, no matter how poorly Brewer played, I think the Rockets were generally married to him for several reasons. One was that contract. He was in the first year of a three-year, $24 million deal. You wanted to prove it was worth it. Secondly, you had pretty much the same system in place, even though it was McHale and then Bickerstaff. It's still generally the same principles of the same offense, the same core around him. And you had a high degree of desperation to reach the playoffs, to figure out what you had just one season ago. And so they were always going to err on the side of the veteran and err on the side of the guy with the contract and the guy who played so well for them in that role a year ago. Now, I think that that status is gone. You're not going to see Corey Brewer getting that same benefit of the doubt. If he plays well, and he certainly can, great. He can be that fourth bench guy in the rotation. But you know what? It's a new system. It's a new coach. I don't think Mike D'Antoni is going to hand him that role. He's going to have to earn it. And you know what? The Rockets have spent a lot of time praising both Sam Decker and KJ McDaniels. D'Antoni, the other day at training camp, went out of his way to mention that Decker could play the 2, 3, and 4 spots. They had been working with him a lot. He was the team's best player in Summer League. And this is a guy who was a mid-first-round pick in the 2015 draft. And really, they're just as optimistic now as they were then. You didn't really learn anything about Decker a year ago because he had the back surgery and did not really get to play. So really, he's essentially still a mid-first-round rookie who they are very optimistic about and excited. And KJ McDaniels is a guy who they view as a potential stopper defensively. He can, if he can ever put the offensive side of the court together with it, to at least be passable on that end. They have a lot of optimism for those guys, and whereas last year, between the contract and the same core as the 2015 Western Conference Finals team led them to err on the side of Brewer, I don't think they're going to do that this year. I think clearly Corey is going to have to earn it. If he doesn't, you know what? Corey Brewer, his contract this year doesn't even matter. This year, his salary is already basically spent. The Rockets are not going to be able to do much with cap room, even if they could shed his contract tomorrow. I don't know that it benefits them to do that because, of course, free agents have already signed. There's not that much benefit to having cap room anymore. So really, from a practical standpoint, the next time the Rockets are going to need cap room is next July, July 2017. And you know what? At that point, Corey Brewer will be a one-year, $8 million expiring contract. That's really not that bad. It's really not hard to offload, even if he doesn't play much this year. So, again, I don't think there's the same incentive. You know, if you give up on Corey Brewer prematurely in year one, you're potentially looking at something of an albatross of a contract because certainly with 2 years, $60 million left, you want that guy to, if not have value to you, at least have positive trade value around the NBA. Really, I don't think it's that big of a deal anymore. So is Corey Brewer out? No, but he's going to have to earn it. And if he doesn't, are Decker and McDaniels proven? No, but between Corey Brewer's potential bounce back and Sam Decker and KJ McDaniels taking a leap forward, you can definitely at that spot, especially in Mike D'Antoni's system, all three are pretty athletic and seem to be good fits. All you need is one to step up. And you can even throw P.J. Hairston in the mix. Again, I think that's a long shot. I think P.J. Hairston, they signed him primarily for D-League depth and to work with him over time. But you know what? He's a good athlete. He has a clear skill set. Maybe he steps up. You can even say you have four young quality players. Well, three young quality players and Corey Brewer, who is, of course, a veteran. But, you know, you have three or four options, and all you need is one of them. If one of those four steps up, then you add them to Eric Gordon, Nene or Capella, whoever is off the bench there, and Demo, yes, you're looking at potentially a very good bench, even a top 10 bench. And then you replace, you mix that with your starting lineup, with James, with Ryan Anderson, with Beverly Ariza, and hopefully Clint Capella making the leap forward. It's hard to see this being an average basketball team. They would seem to be above average in a lot of areas. So, again, I don't think that's anything earth-breaking to those, or earth-shattering to those of you that regularly listen to this podcast. I've been, you know, I would say more optimistic than the average fan regarding the Rockets this entire offseason. But I think it's good to hear some context now and then because Zach Harper and David Locke, they're very much national guys. They don't have any local ties to Houston. So to hear folks like that have some optimism, not just about James Harden, not just about Mike D'Antoni, but about even the finer points, the bench, to me, it's reassuring because when I look at this roster, the more I look up and down, I can't see this being a 41.5 win team. I think this, barring injuries, is clearly a better team than that. And better bench play, that's just another reason for it. Anyway, that happy note, I'm going to wrap up and wish all of you guys a good weekend. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do that at Ben Dubose. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, you can do that at Locked On Rockets. And you can always email the show at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com if you have any questions for me or if you would like to potentially advertise and become a sponsor with this show. Again, email address LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. So again, thanks to all of you guys for listening. I hope you have a great weekend and stay tuned to your Twitter feeds because you know what? Saturday, October 1st, that is the qualifying offer day with Demo. You might finally have some movement on that front and maybe early next week you can get him into camp. The other thing, Sunday night, October 2nd, that's the preseason debut against the Shanghai Sharks. Watch my Twitter feed, watch Lockdown Rockets. We're going to try and get you some content, both in terms of the opener, anything we learned from that game, as well as from Yao Ming. Yao Ming is going to, of course, recently inducted to the NBA Hall of Fame. He's going to be in Houston for the game. He's going to do immediate availability on Sunday night before the game. So between having Yao back in town and the preseason opener, I suspect that Sunday and Monday we're going to have a lot more content for you guys on this Locked On Rockets show. So again, thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, and I'll be chatting with you again early next week.